Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Antibody testing will be at Coliseum. OA News at OAOA.com. Antibody testing on first responders will begin Monday at the Ector County Coliseum. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Sarvanan explained that the testing is not to establish immunity, but if you have been exposed. It is for research purposes to plan out what our response should look like and where we are on the curve. He said the test is not a swab like the COVID-19 test, but is a blood draw to determine if someone has been exposed. Some local medical offices are already doing the antibody testing, but he said those results, unlike the COVID-19 tests, are not required to be reported to the health department. Ector County's setup for the first responder antibody testing runs through May 15th and will work much like the current COVID-19 testing being done at the Ector County Coliseum. Those results of first responders will be reported to the health department. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton said the antibody testing is a partnership between local agencies, including Texas Tech, ECISD, UTPB, the county, and the city. He said first responders have more contact with citizens than most people do, and determining how many have been exposed could provide useful information. During Wednesday's Zoom news briefing, the theme was one of thankfulness for the work of nurses. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said the 200th birthday of Florence Nightingale, called the Lady with the Lamp, is particularly fitting in light of the pandemic this year. It speaks volumes for what we are going through. We are doing things we have never done before, and the current times is us carrying a lamp into the darkness. I can't say thank you enough. Timmons also gave an update on MCH staff, saying that a second housekeeper is quarantining at home, not because of contact at the hospital, but because she rode to work with another housekeeper who is also self-isolating. ORMC President Stacy Brown said she knows nursing is a calling and expressed gratitude for all nurses. Brown reported that out of 316 tests, 14 have been positive, 298 negative, and 4 are pending. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin reported that out of 785 tested, 55 have been positive, 712 negative, 18 pending, and none were on ventilators. He said he had cooked hamburgers for Nurses Day and offered up his appreciation. A special thank you to every nurse in our community for all the things they do, things most people couldn't handle. Sarvanan talked about his positive experiences with nurses and the difficult work they do. He also addressed a May 2nd statewide peak in the number of Texas cases just as Texas is opening up. He said it is too soon to tell if that peak had anything to do with limited opening across Texas, and said if Texans don't continue to embrace social distancing, that there could be repercussions in more cases. We will most definitely see a spike if we don't follow those principles. We can still have some level of normalcy while being safe, he added, with Mother's Day on the horizon this Sunday. Ector County's numbers on Wednesday reported 90 positives, 63 negatives, 4 deaths, 1,405 tested. The drive-thru testing showed 192 calls received, with 52 tested, 3 positive, 36 negative, 13 pending. A special thank you to every nurse in our community for all the things they do, things most people couldn't handle. Russell Tippin, MCH President and CEO. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 90. Ector County negative, 1,245 out of 1,405 tested with 70 pending, 4 deaths. Midland County, 91 confirmed out of 1,830 tested, 8 deaths. Texas, 34,422 confirmed with 438,938 tested. Total Texas deaths, 948. U.S. cases, 1,256,639 total confirmed and 74,121 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Food bank funds. Texas Mutual Insurance Company on Wednesday announced a donation of $50,000 in grant funding for the Food Bank of West Texas in Odessa that is vital to COVID-19 relief and recovery. The Food Bank of West Texas has been on the front lines of local COVID-19 efforts. The donation is part of the company's larger $2 million commitment to nonprofits across the state. As a result of COVID-19, many businesses in Odessa may be struggling and may not have the means to support their local nonprofits as usual. Texas Mutual is stepping in to bridge that gap by offering financial assistance to the local organizations who need it most so they can continue providing crucial services to the Odessa community. Our mission of creating a stronger, safer Texas is more important now than it ever has been, said Reg Gergasco, president and CEO of Texas Mutual. Texas is blessed to have a multitude of nonprofits doing difficult and necessary work to care for our communities. Partnering with them to take care of Texans is an honor. Our hope is that this donation will help them retain staff, provide resources, and give the help many Texans need right now. Supporting these nonprofit organizations is a crucial part of the company's effort to mitigate the impact of COVID-19 on Texas employers and employees. Learn more about the grants and how Texas Mutual is supporting its policy holders at texasmutual.com/coronavirus. Livestream graduations. Graduation ceremonies for Ector County ISD's class of 2020 will be virtual this year, but they will contain some of the same elements students would have experienced in a face-to-face event. Dates for the graduations are May 22nd and May 23rd, and they will be broadcast at the same time they would actually have been held, Superintendent Scott Murray said. Permian is on May 22nd, and Odessa High School is May 23rd. The graduations would be live if not for coronavirus. The one for Odessa Collegiate Academy is at 10 a.m. May 22nd, the one for OC Techs at noon, May 22nd, George A.W. Bush New Tech Odessa at 2 p.m., May 22nd, and PHS at 8:30 p.m., May 22nd. Odessa High School's graduation will be at 8:30 p.m., May 23rd. Sales tax down. The city of Odessa received its May sales tax check in the amount of $5,761,071.69. This amount includes the economic development sales tax of 1/4 cent. The city of Odessa will receive $4,608,857.35, and the Odessa Development Corporation will receive $1,152,214.34. The city saw a decrease in sales tax revenue, with May's sales tax revenue total of $4,608,857.35, which reflects a $539,104.27, or 10.47%, as compared to May 2019. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 2019-20 is up 33.18%, or $8,800,540.63, as compared to budgeted amount expected at this point in the fiscal year. In addition, the 2019-20 year-to-date amount is below the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $4,100,116.83, or 10.40%. The city has budgeted $41,100,000 in net sales tax revenues for this current fiscal year. Holy Cross Catholic High School, which consists of 22 students and 10 staff members, has adapted to the coronavirus pandemic by going completely virtual. Students have laptops and contact their teachers to work from home, a strategy that was first tested out during their snow days back in February of this year. Ben Powell, Odessa American. Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 7th, 2020. Page 2, read. Churches starting to resume services, by Ruth Campbell. RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. With a mixture of excitement and apprehension, at least three Odessa churches, First Baptist, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, and Holy Redeemer, are planning to resume live services this weekend with social distancing guidelines in place. We're tired of being closed. That's the bottom line. We're tired of being closed, and the governor has ruled that churches are essential, and so we are following his guidelines to the T. And we've determined that we can follow his guidelines and have worship together. It will look very different in terms of people being spread out and everything, because the max we can get in our building, under the way we've got it set up, is about 350, and so that's why we're doing multiple services, said the Reverend Byron McWilliams, senior pastor at First Baptist. He added that the church is ready to reopen for in-person services as allowed under a state order. McWilliams said his church will have services at 9 a.m. for those 65 and older, 11 a.m. for all ages with child care provided with reservations, and 5 p.m. for all ages with no child care provided. Those attending must register themselves and their families for the service they want to attend and bring the registration with them to church. Those who want child care at the 11 a.m. service must register the number of children for child care when registering for the service. The website says, your children's temperature will be screened upon entrance, and all who are running a fever will not be admitted. Social distancing will be practiced, McWilliams noted. Every other row will be closed off, and people will be escorted to their seats. There will be seats between families. We're going to encourage people to wear masks if they have them. It's not a requirement, but we encourage that, and we will take studious care to make sure that we go and sanitize everything once the services are over. And everything is always kept very clean anyway, but we will be extra studious at that, and then we will encourage people as well to stay home if they're sick. Stay home if they have any symptoms whatsoever, and if they feel any concern whatsoever about getting out, we encourage them to stay home at this time, McWilliams said. McWilliams said he plans to preach all three services. We're looking forward to seeing people, and we're telling people also don't violate the social distancing regulations that we are living under right now. And that means that when you see somebody hugging, we're really not promoting hugging and shaking hands and all that. Just smile from a distance and say hi and say, "Man, it's great to see you," McWilliams said. Bishop Michael Siss of the Diocese of San Angelo said he has issued guidelines to churches that want to move into Phase 1. They have to get his approval first. Holy Redeemer and St. Elizabeth Ann Seton are two churches that have gotten the go-ahead from Siss to restart services on Sunday. Churches can choose four ways to provide Mass. One way is where it's a Mass inside the church with a reduced crowd, and that's the one that Governor Greg Abbott was specifically talking about when he gave certain rules about social distancing, Siss said. Parishioners will sit in every other pew, and there will be 6 feet between people who are not members of the same household. The other way they could choose to do it is a parking lot Mass. The advantage of the parking lot service is that you can serve more people, so some of them will probably do that. Then a third way to do it is where you do the service without people in your church, without people in the parking lot, but then after you've done basically a non-public service inside the building, then people come and get communion, Siss said. They received communion even though they were not there in the church for the Mass. You can either distribute outside or inside, but in that case it would probably be outside, he added. If communion was conducted that way, it would most likely be after a Mass was broadcast, either online or over FM radio. In that situation, you don't have the problem of sitting them in the church because they're all in their cars or at home participating virtually, and then they just come by and get communion, Siss said. Asked how priests would distribute communion, Siss said very carefully. I've given them protocols as to how to do that. For example, the one who's giving the communion is wearing a face covering, and they have sterilized their hands, and the people coming up in the line have to be spaced feet apart. And they have to receive it in their hands, not on their tongue. And they don't receive the blood of Christ, only the host, the body of Christ, so that they would not be drinking from the cup. The minister drops that communion host into their hand, so there's no person-to-person touch. And the minister who is distributing it, the communion wafer, has a mask on. If by any chance they touched their hand when they dropped it in there, then they have to stop and sterilize their hands and then start with the next person, Siss said. We've got some pretty strict rules, and also the ones who are distributing the communion and anybody who's helping in those masses, whether they're part of a choir or they're distributing communion or they're doing the readings or an usher, any of those people, before they're able to serve, we screen them. We'll be screening them when they arrive, he added. The churches will use a no-touch infrared medical-grade thermometer and ask everyone a series of health questions, such as whether they have a fever or cough. If any of those symptoms are present, they will be sent home or they can't serve that day. We're trying to be as careful as we can, and we've consulted medical experts and public health experts in coming up with our protocols. The reason why we're allowing the different churches to decide which of those models they are going to use and when they want to get started is because there are some who might not find the supplies. Like if they don't find enough disinfecting supplies, then it can't get started until they have a sufficient supply. Or if they don't have enough masks or things like that, or if they don't have the infrared thermometer, then they have to wait until they're ready to do it safely. It's going to vary from place to place because, you know, we cover 29 counties, he said. In Sanderson, in Terrell County, for example, he said they don't have any COVID-19 cases, so they will have an easier time getting restarted than someone in Abilene, where there are many cases, Siss said. Father Mark Woodruff of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church said his church can hold up to 1,100 people, but he estimates with the seating set up and social distancing, it will be down to a maximum of 450. Once capacity is reached, people will be asked to come back at another time, Woodruff said. There are services Saturday night, 3 Sunday morning, and 1 Sunday afternoon, Woodruff said. While the church has enough room to spread services out, he said they don't expect a large crowd. For example, we've been telling older people and people with those medical conditions that COVID-19 is really rough on, we're urging them to stay home. And also any people who are feeling hesitant about being out at this time, we're also urging them to stay home, he said. Woodruff is feeling some mixed emotions about starting services again. They won't be able to socialize the way they did after a service, and everyone over the age of 2 will have to wear a mask. We've got our permission from the bishop because we've got our team, we've got our placement in order. I'm kind of excited. A lot of people have mentioned that they really have missed going to church in person. We have been live streaming our services, and we're going to continue doing that for the time being. But I'm excited. It will be nice to have a congregation again, he said. A spokeswoman for Holy Redeemer Church said they also will have services starting this weekend. The first is at 5 p.m. Saturday in English. There will be 3 on Sunday, 1 at 8 a.m. in Spanish, 11 a.m. in English, and 6 p.m. in Spanish. The protocols set out by Bishop Sis will be followed. The Reverend Sean Smith, head pastor of Asbury United Methodist Church, said he's tentatively planning to reopen May 24th for a single 11 a.m. service. We were debating our considerations. We were looking at the number of cases. We're still going to be watching the number of cases, so we wanted to delay long enough after the reopening of other businesses to see if there's a spike in cases that might indicate a danger or a risk to our church family. And second, we believe that 3 weeks will give us enough time to prepare to organize the sanctuary and to get the ushers ready to go for in-person worship and maintaining social distance within our worship service, Smith said. Helping in the decision was an invitation from Mayor David Turner, inviting all the pastors to an April 29th Zoom meeting where a medical professional spoke about COVID-19 safety measures. We're also being guided by the Texas State Guidelines for Worship Spaces, Smith said. Asbury UMC has 2 worship services with an average attendance last year of about 142, with each individual service drawing 60 to 80 people. Smith said there won't be a nursery when they reopen. He said they're trying to limit the number of people that attend the service to about 75, given the size of the sanctuary. We're trying to what the governor has recommended for non-religious institutions, about 25% of capacity. But we have yet to determine what our complete capacity is going to be. We're going to be working on that over the next 3 weeks as well to figure the numbers, Smith said. He added that some people want to return to church right away, but the majority is hesitant. The vast majority of the people at our church have expressed a little bit of anxiety, and so we're going to make sure that we provide ways to worship online and participate in Sunday school online, even going forward from the 24th, so no one will have to attend in person. They will be able to find worship resources online, Smith said. He said they have gotten feedback on the remote services from as far away as New York and Africa. I think we're being reasonably prudent to wait until after we've seen what the effect of reopening is going to be, Smith said. The mathematical models coming out of the University of Texas and the University of Washington, I believe, really indicate that as a church, I think we can keep the social distancing protocols. But I think that we as an area might be rushing a little bit, And I think we're going to just have to need to be careful and observe what is happening as we go forward to make sure we are treasuring the gift of life that God has given us. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 7th, 2020, local news. UTPB officials optimistic about fall reopening. OA News at OAOA.com. University of Texas Permian Basin officials announced Wednesday optimism about opening in the fall, but it will likely look different than it has before. Our plans will be guided by medical and public health experts and in accordance with federal, state, and local directives. We are committed to finding the right balance between our two most important objectives. One, the well-being of the Falcon family and our community, and two, fulfilling our core mission by educating the next generation of leaders and inspiring creativity and learning, President Sandra Woodley said in a news release. The university conceded that it does not yet have all the answers in place because uncertainty continues to persist and will do so for the near future, the release said. Summer classes will remain online. A task force made up of representatives from each area of the campus has been working to come up with a flexible plan, which will use blended options to include campus-based experiences as well as high-quality online and hybrid learning, the release said. Some preliminary considerations include staggering class times and locations to promote social distancing, staggering work schedules for staff combined with some additional remote working hours, blended instructional models, hybrid online and campus-based instruction, protective equipment and cleaning sanitizing strategies, protective measures and accommodations for those who are at greater risk, robust testing protocols for students, faculty, and staff, quarantines as needed, contact tracing, testing isolation when appropriate, prohibiting large gatherings, providing face coverings, protective barriers for transactional contact, ensuring frequent deep cleaning of facilities, including classrooms, labs, and common spaces, new rules for housing and dining halls, new rules for athletics and campus events. Two ECISD seniors earn College Board Opportunity scholarships. OA News at OAOA.com. Permian High School seniors Sydney Anglin and Samantha Delgado each earned $1,000 in College Board Opportunity scholarships. They are among nearly 4,000 members of the class of 2020 who have earned $3.6 million for completing one or more of the college planning steps laid out in the College Board Opportunity Scholarships program. Permian High School and ECISD congratulate Sydney and Samantha. Advanced Academics Services Director Omega Loera said in a news release. These students demonstrated the importance of college planning by taking one or more of the six steps laid out in this first-of-its-kind scholarship program, and those efforts were rewarded. Planning and preparation are tools every student can use to achieve their goals. We encourage all high school juniors to sign up for these scholarships and begin qualifying for invaluable aid during these challenging times. Student winners from 48 states, including Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, earned awards ranging from $500 to $2,000. The College Board has also awarded $1 million to recipients of its first ever Complete Your Journey Opportunity Scholarship. 25 student winners from across the country earned a $40,000 scholarship for completing all six college planning steps laid out in the College Board Opportunity Scholarships program. Research shows that completing specific steps helps clarify the complex college planning process, especially for low-income and first-generation students. Class of 2021 students who opt in now and get started by building their college list on Big Future by July 31st will be eligible for the next $40,000 Complete Your Journey scholarship. To qualify for the Complete Your Journey $40,000 College Board Opportunity Scholarship drawing, participants completed these 6 college planning steps. Build your college list. Students get started by exploring colleges they're interested in. 700 Build Your College List scholarships, each worth $500. Practice for the SAT. Students use official SAT practice on Khan Academy, 1,500 practice for the SAT scholarships, each worth $1,000. Improve your score. Students show how practice pays off by improving their scores. 150 Improve Your Score scholarships, each worth $2,000. Strengthen your college list. Students make sure their list has a mix of reach, match, and safety schools. 300 Strengthen Your College List scholarships, each worth $500. Complete the FAFSA, F-A-F-S-A. Students fill out the free government form to apply for financial aid. 800 complete the FAFSA scholarships, each worth $1,000. Apply to colleges. Students apply to the colleges they want to attend. 500 apply to colleges scholarships, each worth $1,000. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 7th, 2020. Opinion. National View. Don't kill the Postal Service. The point. The president either doesn't know or doesn't care that the Postal Service doesn't control its own pricing. The Postal Service, our oldest civilian institution, is in grave danger from the new coronavirus, and President Trump sounds eager to strike the mortal blow. On Friday, April 24th, the president threatened to block $10 billion in borrowing authority authorized by Congress unless the service raises its package mailing prices by approximately 4 times. Trump's target is Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post and the e-commerce giant Amazon, but the collateral damage would be vast. Postal package rates would be far higher than those of FedEx or UPS, which could then raise theirs to everybody. The Postal Service would very likely go under at a time when we need it more than ever to handle voting by mail in the face of the coronavirus. That, of course, would serve another of Trump's irrational vendettas. He has it in his head that mail voting favors Democrats, even though people who know anything about it say it doesn't. Wisconsin's recent vote was a rare exception. In Florida, Republicans turned out far more mail-in ballots than Democrats in 2016 and 2018. The Postal Service was already endangered before the new coronavirus came along to depress mailings and revenue. It had been in the red for 13 years and was struggling under questionable burdens that Congress imposed. Now, revenue is down by nearly a third from this time last year, and the USPS is warning that it could run out of cash by September without assistance from Congress. The administration cannot back up Trump's oft-repeated claim that postal rates subsidize Amazon and other mass mailers. The Post's fact-checkers ruled that false, citing uncontested USPS findings that package rates cover from 138 to 189% of the delivery costs, as allowed by law. Nevertheless, the Treasury Department argues rates don't fully cover institutional costs that ought to be attributed to package delivery. The Treasury's defense means the USPS couldn't raise rates as Trump demands without breaking the law. Despite a myriad of competing ways to move merchandise and information, the Postal Service is as indispensable as ever, and in one sense more so. there is no other institution, commercial or private, with the capacity to securely handle voting by mail, the contagion-free alternative to voting in person that is in great and growing demand. It is intolerable that there should be anything partisan, or even in question, about preserving a viable postal service. Yet, Trump threatened to veto that $2.2 trillion emergency appropriation if Congress included money to keep the U.S. mail coming. The $10 billion in borrowing authority for USPS was the best that could be had. The 1970 law that made the service an independent government corporation took away Congress's power to set mailing rates and lodged it in a new agency, the 5-member Postal Regulatory Commission. The service itself has only limited flexibility. The Regulatory Commission consists of 5 presidential appointees who have a complicated law to apply. Congress in 2006 imposed an unparalleled burden by requiring the Postal Service to pre-fund its health benefits 75 years into the future for the sake of employees not yet born. For most of our history, the post office was a cabinet department. Local postmasters were appointed or fired depending on who won the White House, and Congress set postal rates. The 1970 law was intended to get the politics out. In February, the House voted 309-106 to scrap the pre-funding requirement, but the bill has gone into the Senate's dead letter box. Other proposed legislation would ease the health care burden by requiring retirees to enroll in Medicare Part B. In December, the Postal Regulatory Commission proposed rules that would give the Postal Service more flexibility in raising its charges. The docket is flooded with objections and delays. Whatever their merits, private delivery services are not a plausible replacement for the Postal Service. They are not obliged to serve every address in the nation, however remote or distant from the Internet. Neither are they set up to handle the vast volumes of first-class mail, advertisements, catalogs, and periodicals that are the Postal Service's responsibilities. Millions of people depend on the Postal Service for their Social Security checks, their medications, and other necessities. Imagine for a moment that the Postal Service goes bankrupt and collapses. How much might it cost to mail a bill payment, a birthday card, or an absentee ballot in the face of the pandemic? The cheapest FedEx envelope rate is $8.50. And how much more would it strain the economy to absorb another 630,000 people out of work? Congress should rescue the Postal Service with the same zeal in which it voted bailout money to America's most profitable corporations, and Trump should get or be pushed out of the way. Senators Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, what are you going to do to save the Postal Service from the president's newest scheme? The Sun Sentinel. Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Thursday, May 7th, 2020. Obituaries. Elizabeth Piper Colquitt, Dallas. Elizabeth Piper Colquitt, 97, died peacefully May 4th, 2020, at Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, Texas, from complications resulting from surgery for a broken hip. She has now gone to be home with her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. A visitation will be held at the Alpine Memorial Funeral Home on Sel Ross Boulevard in Alpine, Texas, on Friday, May 8th, from 6:30 p.m. until 8 p.m. A graveside service will be held at the Marfa, Texas Cemetery on Saturday, May 9th at 11 a.m. A reception will be held after the graveside service at the home of Hester Ann White, located at 713 North Plateau in Marfa. Service will be performed by Reverend Matt Miles, pastor of Fort Davis First Presbyterian Church. Mrs. Colquitt was born in Corsicana, Texas, on April 6, 1923, to Leslie Derwent Piper and Lena Bell Ard Piper. She lived in Corsicana until she was five, and then the family moved to San Angelo, Texas in 1928. On November 2, 1946, she married James Kellum J.K. Colquitt in San Angelo. They had two sons, Kellum and Jay. In 1954, the family moved to Odessa, Texas, where their two sons started school. The love of her life died in 2006, and for the 10 years prior, she had been a faithful caregiver and devoted wife to Mr. Colquitt. She was preceded in death by her parents and by her husband of 60 years. She is survived by two sons, Kellum and wife Emily of Dallas, Texas, Jay and wife Constance of Lake Buchanan, Texas, three grandsons, two granddaughters, one nephew, and five grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please make a memorial contribution to the Texas A&M Band in her honor. Bobby Lauren Miller, Alpine. Bobby Lauren Miller, 85, of Alpine, celebrated his home going into the arms of our risen Lord and Savior Tuesday, March 31st, 2020, at 1:45 a.m. due to complications following a stroke on March 23rd. Daddy was born in Cleveland, Oklahoma, to Reverend Albert Lauren and Indianola Rice Miller on March 12, 1935. He was the oldest of three siblings, Jeannie Miller Cone and Larry Miller. God gifted this family with such a blessing as Bob Miller, husband, father, and papa, or his wife of almost 62 years, Joyce Miller, oldest son, Johnny Miller, and granddaughter, Caroline Miller, middle son, Brad Miller, and wife, Terry, whom Dad always called his daughter from the very start, oldest grandson, Lauren Miller, and youngest grandson, Colin, and his wife, Deborah Miller, youngest son, Monty Miller. Mr. Miller is further survived by his younger brother, Larry Miller, and wife, Camille Miller, of Albuquerque, New Mexico, as well as his brother-in-law, Dr. Claude Cone of Albuquerque, New Mexico, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that a blessing in Mr. Miller's name be made to your charity of choice. If you wish to mail a card of condolences to the family, you are kindly asked to mail the correspondence to Alpine Memorial Funeral Home, 209 West Sol Ross Avenue, Alpine, Texas, 79830. Death notices. Gerald Samuel Jerry Benton, Odessa. Gerald Samuel Jerry Benton, 71, of Odessa, died Tuesday, May 5th, 2020, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m., May 8th, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. John Frederick Saurer, Andrews. John Frederick Saurer, 62, of Andrews, died Monday, May 4th, 2020, in Andrews. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, May the 3rd, 2020. A&M Center. Average Midland County home fetches $357,506 in March. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. The average home sold in Midland County went for a price of $357,506 during the month of March, according to information from the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. The center reported year-over-year increases for average price and median price, $315,000, compared to the same month in 2019. Most other statistics showed the market inside Midland County favoring the seller. The number of homes sold went from 262 to 240. The number of homes on the market at the end of the month nearly doubled to 685, and the months of inventory jumped from 1.5 to 2.9. Compared to larger markets across the region, Midland's market is still showing the highest average price for a home sold. The county with the next highest price is Ector County at $243,991. Midland's months of inventory also is the highest.
Get vaccinated. Dear Dr. Roach, I will never willingly get a vaccine for anything. I have been sick only once in my life, and it was from a vaccination that I received in the seventh grade. I am now 80. Besides my bad experience, I do not get vaccinations because I do not know what they are. Also, I do not know the difference between a virus, a germ, and bacteria, nor how they make a person sick. How do these things interface with the cells that make up our bodies? Many of us cannot accept the advice to take this because it will prevent whatever. If I had the medical details, I might reconsider vaccination. Anon. Answer. Making a medical decision should ideally be based on the best, most up-to-date information. For more than 65 years, you have been choosing against one of the most important medical interventions we have, based on a single bad experience. I assure you that vaccine technology is much, much better now than it was in the 1950s. Vaccines teach the immune system how to make antibodies to a particular infection and may also stimulate the cellular immune system. The way this works is complicated, and physicians spend months learning how the immune system works and how vaccines interact with the immune system. By contrast, vaccine scientists spend years or decades learning in great detail how to make safe and effective vaccines. At the time I write this, I know of many different teams trying heroically to develop a safe and effective vaccine against coronavirus. A vaccine could prevent millions of deaths. As a provider on the front line of taking care of these patients, I cannot express how much I look forward to a vaccine. As a person in their 80s, you should too. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853. 6475.
Teen chafes under Dad's strict style of parenting. Dear Abby for Thursday. Dear Abby, I'm a teenage girl in an average family. I started getting interested in LGBTQ+ and other social justice topics when I was in fifth grade. Since then, I have realized that, among other things, I'm a lesbian, a liberal, and an atheist. This wouldn't be a problem, but my father hates many of the things I am or stand for. He's an extremely conservative Christian, gun rights person, and he wants me and my brothers to join the military. He constantly pushes me to be the best that I can be, and I try, but his idea of best is very different from mine. I have several mental problems which resulted in me getting special privileges in school. I use them whenever I can, but it is never enough for him. He keeps searching through my grade book until he finds something new for me to do, regardless of the date it was assigned or whether it can be graded anymore. I have various restrictions on my use of technology, so I can barely contact my friends. It has gotten to the point that I am worried about when I come out and looking forward to college just so I can get away. Please tell me what to do in the meantime, because college is 5 years away. Waiting in Virginia. Dear Waiting, you and your dad have very different outlooks on life, and that's okay. That said, you must live under his roof for the next 5 years, so be diplomatic and keep some of your opinions to yourself as long as possible. You may think your father is heavy-handed in parenting you, but has it occurred to you that when he goes through your grade book, he's trying to make sure you know how to work all the problems in it? Placing restrictions on a minor's use of technology is intelligent parenting, at least for someone just entering her teens. Please try to cut him some slack. Recognize there is a bright future ahead of you if you concentrate on your studies to the best of your ability and buckle down now. Dear Abby, my 32-year-old son, Jerry, wanted to propose to his girlfriend, but didn't have money for a ring. My husband offered him my original engagement ring, assuming for some reason, or maybe just not thinking, that my old ring didn't hold sentimental value to me. Although I wore that 1/3-carat diamond every day for 32 years before getting a new, larger one. After the ring was offered, I felt forced to let him have it. I knew it wouldn't fit his girlfriend, and I also didn't think she would settle for such a small diamond, but I figured he would have the diamond put into a setting that fit her. I got over my feeling of loss knowing he would use the ring. Well, he didn't. He gave her my ring, and then they went out and charged a nice-sized engagement ring that she selected. My original ring now hangs on a chain in her jewelry box. Should I ask for my ring back? Means a lot in Texas. Dear Means a Lot, because your first engagement ring is not being used as intended and was only a placeholder until your son's fiancée got what she really wanted, I see no reason why you shouldn't ask, and I also see no reason why she shouldn't graciously comply.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your son at birth. The sun sign is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Taurus and a moon in Scorpio. Happy birthday for Thursday, May 7, 2020. Aesthetic and devoted you loves beauty, so this year will be a challenge. Although you will succeed in having a luxurious lifestyle, you will enjoy all that you have rather than lament what you lack. If single, you will have limited social contact and prefer the comfort and security of your own home. If attached, you take your relationship very seriously and do not beat around the bush. Your partner reciprocates. Aquarius can get a bit silly. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 3 stars. Money matters will certainly be on your mind, and you rethink financial commitments and investment strategies. Be careful of going overboard financially when passion conquers common sense. Disagreements over spending are likely, and romantic pressures lead to crises. Tonight, no online shopping. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 2 stars. Expect partners to be particularly irritable. Arguments might be easily provoked by nagging and could deteriorate into sarcastic mudslinging. However, a compassionate outlook may lead to creative problem-solving and a call to a marriage counselor. Tonight, by yourself. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. Skip domestic decision-making, as any decision made will be subject to change. Besides this, you will find that you do not have all the facts. Today favors entertaining at home as well as interior decorating, which can be done in a unique style. Tonight, celebrate. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 5 stars. Crab is the birth sign of more millionaires than any in the zodiac. Dedicated effort allows you to join their ranks in years to come. Today you encounter a rare opportunity to right past mistakes regarding poor financial decisions. You are elated. Tonight, as you like. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. There is nothing small or petty about the way you usually decorate or entertain, Leo, and especially not today. Your mood is high and, in keeping with your already expensive nature, rather overindulgent. Enjoy while you can. It's been a while. Tonight, a fantastic dinner. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 3 stars. Today brings financial assistance or ideas from another. There will be a great deal of commotion and many short outings. Remain focused, as there are distractions. Strive to be clear in your communications. Transportation issues might need attention. Tonight, slow down. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 3 stars. Finances are volatile this year. Develop an awareness of shifting economic conditions in the world around you. This will be key to achieving greater security. Check in on an elderly relative who just wants to talk. Tonight, listen to a friend's qualms. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Your professional sphere is widening. There is opportunity, but many demands are placed on you. It is easy to feel overwhelmed. You might have to choose between business and a relationship. This starts a significant period of self-discovery. Tonight, spend time with a child. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Today finds the lone wolf part of your nature surfacing. Spend part of today in solitude. A dream or deep meditation can provide meaningful guidance as well as a brilliant and profitable idea. Tonight, listen to someone you see every day for a suggestion. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Friends suggest new goals and projects. Membership in an organization might prove invaluable. Today shows those who genuinely like you offering practical support. More tranquility than you have experienced in many months will be present. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 2 stars. A job or project might be ending. Do not try to struggle against the inevitable. If one door closes, another will open. Your memory and learning ability will be in top form. Tonight, take the night off and have a soothing herbal bath. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Emails and conversations lead to really important learning experiences. Ambitions will stir and your path will be especially important to you. Your flair for relating with all types of people leads to a worthwhile opportunity. Tonight, follow through on exploring offers that come your way. Born today, poet Robert Browning, 1812, composer Johannes Brahms, 1833, actor Gary Cooper, 1901.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.